Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Well, the big day is nearly upon us. You should be on door number 12 of your advent calendar. And what says Christmas better than a discussion of good things to eat and a bit of a nose around the shops? It's the 12th of December 2014. I'm N. Quentin Wolfe, and this is Londonist Out Loud.
Hey baby, let me take you down, so we'll play some strange sights and sounds you ain't never seen the like before, just a stone's throw from your front door. Hey baby, sniff out me, see the peace of the air, land and sea, some creep, some saw down the road, jam brand store.
My heart aches for some far off place.
Well, hello, hello. Among the list of things that we've never done on this podcast is come to Camden. I can't quite believe that. It's such an interesting, unique cultural hub that I can't quite believe we've not been here, but we haven't. And the other thing we haven't done on the podcast is interview somebody called Siddharth Vijayakumar. So we're going to set both of those straight today. And he is here and we are here. And hello.
Hello, Quentin. Nice to meet you. I'm glad you got my name right there. That's very impressive.
Likewise.
I'm impressed with the pronunciation as well.
Are you actually?
Yeah, I am actually. That's pretty good.
Oh, well, okay. I won't attempt it again.
You did it in a very good Indian accent as well. My mother would be proud.
I've made somebody's mother proud already. We're in Camden, as I say, and we're here because this is the spiritual home of Grub Club, and you're the co-founder of Grub Club. And I must say before we start that we were due to be speaking to the other co-founder of Grub Club, but she is indisposed due to laryngitis, and she was mouthing to me, sorry, she can't possibly talk, and she shoved Sid in front of the microphone and said, without any warning at all, talk in Camden. And so Sid has very generously agreed to do exactly that. We're going to be gentle with him, and we'll throw a low ball first of all. What is Grub Club?
So, thanks, Quentin. First of all, I want to apologize to your users for having to put up with me for the next 45 minutes, because Liv is far lovelier than I am. But here we go anyway. So, Grub Club is a business set up by Liv and I about a year and a half ago. And we are a platform for pop-up restaurants. We connect chefs with fun, cool, underused spaces around London so that they can do a pop-up dinner. And then we'll connect them with paying customers who will attend this dinner. So customers or people who love dining out and love unique dining experiences can search for and book pop-up restaurants with us. And we are predominantly in London, and we do a mix of dinners, working with a whole range of talented chefs, some of whom work in Michelin-starred restaurants, and some of them just very talented amateur chefs.
Well, we'll be unpacking that and talking some more about that, talking about the Camden Collective, and we'll be going shopping, and we're going to be finding out what Sid Kumar knows about Camden, and he's wincing. I just wanted to note the phenomenon that you heard in the background there, listener, which is the white van man harping his horn because he saw a microphone. Now, I thought that this was restricted just to members of the female gender.
I thought he was honking because of your long hair, Quentin. I thought that might have been...
Well, you think I was passing myself off as...
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Imagine his surprise when he turns around and sees this looming Hagrid of a man.
You're a handsome young man, Quentin. I'm sure he was very impressed.
Thank you. This could be a very positive interview.
Yeah.
Do you know, one of the things I often look out for Camden, I don't know, because I know you hang around in Camden a fair bit with your work. one of the things I often try and look out for is the pub that appears in With Niall and I. And there's a few candidates I've got in mind, but I'm not sure whether it's here or whether it's somewhere else. Or you don't have to know by any chance.
We're standing outside the Camden Head, but I'm pretty sure that's not the one.
Yeah, that doesn't look right at all. I think it's called the Mother Black Cap in With Niall.
Yeah, I haven't seen that movie, so I can't comment right now, sadly.
Yeah, well, if you happen to know the answer, I'm certainly interested. We are on the junction of Pratt Street and Camden High Street, I think.
Yeah, we are. So we are just outside our offices.
And we're going to head to background music of sirens to our right, and we're going to head up towards Camden Town Tube Station. And of course, the name of the game today is retail, really, I suppose. We're looking at the high street. Yeah. And the first thing that we notice here is that every single shop in this high street is a shop that you can find in any high street.
Exactly. I think this is the problem with a lot of high streets in Britain today. There's a real homogenization of all the shops here. Everything you see around you, you see Greggs, you see Three, you see Nationwide, you see Santander. And all of these are great companies. But I really feel that a place like, especially a place like Camden, really misses out on, you know, its rich history when it used to have, you know, an abundance of independent shops and restaurants. But I have to say, though, I've started to see a lot of that come back recently over the last year, 2 years. And there's some great initiatives out there. For example, the Camden Collective, which is an organization here in Camden that's tasked with bringing fun, independent, creative businesses here to sort of change the face of Camden.
Yeah, because when you think of Camden, really the first thing I think of certainly is those kind of crazy Saturdays where all the people dressed up in goth wear and lots of loud music pumping through. But I wonder whether I'm remembering this from 20 years ago and whether the reality is still that.
Well, I'm sure that was actually this last Saturday, wasn't it?
Because, oh, that's a relief.
No, I think Camden is still a very vibrant place. I think the difference today is that you actually have to find those pockets, whereas before, I think it was, you know, you land in Camden and there was a lot of, you know, you could feel the excitement when you walked out of the tube station.
I was wondering whether it was going to be a town of two halves, because, of course, we're south of the tube station at the moment and the shops are as you described. I wonder whether we were going to go further north and find that that's where all the indie trade was.
Definitely. I think it's a mix, actually. I think on the southern part of Camden High Street, you're starting to see more independent shops. And if you go walk towards Mornington Crescent, there's some interesting independent bars that have opened up recently. There's a really good retail space there, again, funded by the Camden Collective. And then as we walk north towards Camden, yes, I think there's more independent shops as we head towards Chalk Farm. But I think it's changing, though. I think, you know, a lot of initiatives like Camden Collective, obviously, are making some real efforts to try and change that.
Now, it struck me that this area cannot possibly be cheap in terms of retail rental, and there are economies of scale, naturally, that come with
Absolutely.
Being... You used the word great, and I suspect you were being complimentary, but, of course, great in size as well. And I've been thinking a lot recently about the coffee shop culture, and if you were to start up a coffee shop, you've got to be doing something other than just selling coffee, because any of the big chains can outprice you, no problem at all.
Well, I think price isn't the only thing customers care about. I think they care about the story of the coffee shop. I think the coffee we had earlier from Dungaree, I think you really feel the passion of the entrepreneur as you pick up that cup of coffee. And I think more and more consumers are looking for that. You know, they're not looking for this cookie cutter experience of, you know, walking into to a Starbucks or any other chain, and, you know, not having that sort of personal experience. So I would disagree. I think price isn't the only factor when it comes to making any purchase, not just coffee.
That's interesting. I wonder if I quite agree with you. I want to on a sentimental level, but then I realise that my argument, which actually is in alignment with yours, is also sentimental, and it's less to do with the personal service over the counter and more to do with the feeling that when you come to a new town, you're seeing something that you haven't seen before, and that there's a sense of uniqueness, which increasingly right around the country seems lacking.
Yeah, no, I agree. And actually, that's something that we're trying to change at Grub Club. You know, one of the things that, you know, when Liv and I met, you know, we actually met in the jungles of South India. And, you know, in India, you get to, you know, you do, dining out is a big part of the culture there, but you tend to dine out in people's homes and, you know, friends, you know, you eat amazing dinners from your friend's mom, for example. And when we came back to London together, we're just friends, by the way. but when we flew back, to London, something that we felt was lacking here was that sort of unique dining experience. You know, we felt that a lot of the restaurants here were pretty much offering the same standard fare. You know, the price may have been fairly reasonable, but the experience was very much a cookie cutter dining experience. And that's something that we try to change with Grub Club by promoting independent chefs who really care about their food, who want to bring something unique, you know, for a number of reasons. You know, either it could be setting up a restaurant in the future, it could be to, you know, try out new creative menus, or just another way to meet new people.
Well, let's unpack the model. So I'm interested in Grub Club and I want to eat.
Yeah.
Simple as that. I'm going to do what? Get onto your website or phone you? What's going
to
happen?
You can phone me if you like, but it might be easier to go onto the website. So if you go to, you know, grubclub.com, it's a place where you can search for and book these fun social dining experiences. So you could, on one evening, you could eat this amazing Burmese dinner in Hackney, or you can eat, you know, Michelin quality food in the Clock Tower apartment in King's Cross. It really does vary from day to day, and, you know, it's all dependent on the chef.
And it's so you are a hub for what's happening that evening that's been orchestrated by you, but it's not the case that it's as personal as phone you up and you'll send a chef around.
not yet, but we do actually, there are some customers who attend some of these Grub Clubs, and they love that personalized service from the chef, that a lot of them actually request these chefs to come and cook for them, you know, and cook for them and their friends at their home. So we have done many of them as well. So it's actually a nice way for chefs to make some alternative revenue, you know, in addition to their job or even in addition to their Grub Clubs.
Now, the listener will know how this sort of podcast works, and of course there's a commercial angle coming from you, and there's we're interested in your story, but we're also interested in the story of Camden. So we're banned officially for the next 10 minutes from saying the words club or grub. Instead,
what about food club?
We're heading along past the unique to Camden Waterstones, Marks and Spencers and PC World. These are local businesses that grew up here. Mum and pup trade. They've done very well for themselves. Across the street now, we can just about make out, there it is, number 159. And this is the Camden Collective that we've been talking a bit about. Could you map out what Camden Collective is, what it does, where it is?
Sure. So Camden Collective is an organization that is tasked with changing the face of Camden. Over the last 4 to 5 years or so, Camden has become a real homogenized place. You know, every shop looks the same, and even some of the smaller retail shops all seem to sell the same stuff. It's become a bit of a tourist trap. And I think what Camden Collective is trying to do is to sort of change that by bringing really exciting, creative companies to Camden, and initially just offering them office space. So that's how we got involved with the Camden.
Not retail space necessarily.
No, initially it started off with just office space. So they have a space on the other side towards Mornington Crescent. And they were housed about 100 odd companies there, you know, which range in size from, say, one-man bands, you know, all the way up to, say, you know, companies with about 10 people. And it's a whole plethora of companies involved there. You know, you have photographers, you have designers, you have people making, you know, really funky robots in there. You've got a company that's doing a Google Glass project, for example. So there's a whole range of companies. And I think the idea behind this is that these companies will, as they grow in size, will hopefully continue to stay in Camden, hire more people and bring more people to Camden. And also hopefully in the future become a hub for tech companies in the same way Shoreditch is currently. Mm. And I think it will happen over the next year or two. I think the people who run Camden Collective are doing a fantastic job, you know, spreading the word.
Where is the drive, and who's making the choices about which sort of companies are supported? No idea. Yeah. Is there an organising mind behind all of this?
There is. The thing is that there's... Just, now I can say it to you. There's a guy called Simon, but I can never remember his surname because it's like really long. So I don't want to say too much about it.
Because of his long surname?
Yeah.
That's a great way to escape media attention.
Yeah.
So the question remains, I suppose. I mean, is there a sort of a principle behind which kind of, you talked about a tech hub, for example. Are those kind of businesses being prioritized?
I actually think this is the great thing about the collective, that it's not focused on just tech companies. Because I think when you have a lot of tech companies in one place, you know, you get a lot of the conversations tend to be around the same subjects. Whereas when I think when you have, say, companies, you know, people who are photographers or designers or, you know, people from other industries working in one place, I think you get a lot of cross-pollination of ideas that's hugely beneficial to you as a business. Mm. And actually makes for a much more vibrant place to work.
Yeah, that does seem to tie in with the general atmosphere and ambience of Camden, which is as something that's alternative, but it's not prescriptive in how it's alternative.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's been the sort of allure of Camden over the last few decades, hasn't it?
What was it that took the pair of you to the jungles of India?
So both of us, funny enough, happened to be there, you know, randomly setting up. So Liv was setting up a division for her company at the time, and I was setting up a division for my company at the time. So Liv was in financial services. She was at Goldman Sachs for many years. And my background is in advertising. So I set up a vocational training platform, and I went to set up an office for that business in India. And that's where we met. And funny enough, we did actually meet in a jungle in South India at a friend's party that I won't talk too much about.
I really wanted to imagine that it was the Dr. Livingstone thing where you were hacking through the undergrowth.
It wasn't exactly like that, sadly. It was in a very fancy resort in just outside Bangalore. So yeah, sadly no Dr. Livingstone-esque stories. But that would have been more fun then.
I'm going to have to encourage you to break the rule I set now, because I'm wondering how two people with those backgrounds came to decide that this was the Grub Club was the right way forward.
So, funny enough, actually, it was Camden that brought us together. So we met, all Liv and her boyfriend and I and my friends, a whole group of us, we met about 10 years ago in a bar in Camden somewhere. This was back in the day when they were doing lots of psychedelic trance parties here.
And you thought you were in India.
At that time, I have to say, you know, we were very...
Is high the word you're searching for?
Both Liv and I were very sensible young people at that time.
Quite so, yes.
So we probably met over a glass of wine then. But we kept in touch not me personally, but Liv kept in touch with my friends via Facebook. And then when she came to India, she got in touch with us. And that's how we connected. So actually, funny enough, Camden was the starting point for all of these... all of these endeavours.
Well, all the same, with the backgrounds you describe, I'm still not clear on why food came into the frame.
Why wouldn't it come into the frame? I think, one of the things I always think about is that food is probably the new clubbing. You know, when you are, you know, in your early 20s, you do want to go to those funny little clubs in Camden, perhaps. But then as you get older, you know, you start to get more interested in food. And I actually think that we are living in an age where, you know, chefs are, you know, the equivalent of DJs 20 years ago, you know, where there's a massive following for chefs. You know, people really care about, you know, the chef and their background and, you know, what their you know, latest experiments are, you know, in the same way that, you know, people were probably interested in DJs.
I find that very persuasive. Have you worked in advertising, did you say?
Occasionally, yes.
Yeah. Shall we have a look? We're standing outside Camden Collective right now.
Should we have a look around the Camden Collective?
Yeah, perhaps you could give us a whistle-stop tour. The first thing I suppose that we notice is it's a very, it's got a very homespun style. We've got the blackboards outside handwritten with the contents of the shops. There's a lot of wood panelling going on. It looks a little bit like a surf shop, I suppose.
I don't know how many surf shops you've been to, but... I guess I can see where you're coming from, yeah.
Thank you for that grudging agreement. Listener, it does not look like a surf shop, I'm pleased to announce. How would you describe it?
I would describe it as a rustic slash...
Surf shop,
perhaps.
And we've come in, and there's lots of gingham. There's far more gingham than you would expect in a rustic anything. So little bits of bunting here. Sorry, little bits of bunting makes it sound rather pathetic. Long trailing garlands of bunting.
I mean, I think there's like a lot of what I see is like lots of excited young designers and. Let's have a look at some of the stuff.
I think the advertising side is coming out. One of the excited young designers appears to be slipping into a coma. The trade is good. There are quite a number of people in here. Some in-depth conversations going on between traders and customers. Lots of wear spread out.
Yeah, I think you don't really get this in your local shop, do you? Like in your H&M or something. I think, Climate Brothers. You can see the owner of the wares talking to his customers in some depth about where he's got his clothes from, what the inspiration was for his design.
A lot of clothes there that would be good for surfing.
I see some hot pants. Yeah, I think that could work.
let's head further in. We've got jewelry here. Very it's ornate.
Yes, that is jewellery.
Is this not your specialist subject?
Yeah, no. No, not jewellery, no.
The piece I'm finding myself admiring... Here, hello. The piece I'm admiring the most here is a single colour, and it's an eagle in gold. It looks very much like the sort of thing that a pharaoh might adorn himself with.
I don't know what to say to that.
Man who knows nothing about jewellery and doesn't want to know either.
I do. I mean, I do like it. It does look like something that's been picked out, dug up from Luxor or something, I guess. But
that's a wide array.
It looked quite fetching around your neck. Should we try it on for you?
This is a worrying motif that's developing through today's show. This stall is Sugar and Style, and I'd certainly recommend if you want to see some fancy. Some well-crafted jewellery. This is the place for you, and very affordable as well, I've got to say. Let's head down. More jewellery here. I know you like to talk about the jewellery. What do you think of this jewellery? Which would be your favourite piece, and why?
Well, I'm looking at the piece that says "I love London." I guess that's a good start, isn't it? given that we're right at the mid heart of it.
You're a good ambassador for your city.
Thank you. Yeah, I think all we need is "I love Camden," and that'll be done.
But you're a Stratford man yourself.
I am. Yeah. Apparently, he's got a lot of good connections. That's what I've been told. So every time I tell someone I live in Stratford, the first thing that they say to me is that you have really good connections.
So the best thing about Stratford is being able to easily get out of Stratford.
Yeah, so it seems. Although I don't know why I don't actually need the connections because I cycle everywhere. So I actually have a very beautiful cycle ride. I cycle.
Have you got a canal connections, right?
I do, yeah. So I cycle via the canal around the Olympic Park, into Victoria Park, then over Angel, Haggerston, and then Angel. That's a beautiful ride, actually, because I get to see, ducks and swans and warehouses, and it's actually a beautiful cycle ride. Every morning when I get into work, I sort of actually feel, quite thankful that I'm, doing something I love and, able to get to it, in a wonderful way.
So very pleasant indeed. As I've been casting my eyes over some of the really inventive produce here, we're at a jewellery stand here.
You've got bottle cap rings, I think.
With sort of paintings inside the bottle caps.
Becks. I wonder if they have a Stella one. That's my favourite.
And we've got Scrabble rings. But the thing that strikes me the most here is the affordability. And yeah. I guess maybe the vibe is a little bit farmer's market as well. But with all of these concessions, you might easily be persuaded that the price tag is out of your reach, but really not the case, I think.
Yeah, no, not at all. I mean, and actually, if you consider, a lot of the stuff here is handmade. So a lot of, you know, time and effort and love has gone into making these products. And to think that you can buy these rings for little as £10, I think it's wonderful, really.
Well, I'm very tempted by the Scrabble rings, but I'm going to resist.
You could probably try and make your name out of each of the rings.
You'd need longer fingers, though. Yeah. I mean, you certainly would.
Yeah, I need a hand like an octopus, probably.
Let's head back down there. We haven't mentioned the clothing. Garrite is one of the traders that we can see there. Lots of floaty summer dresses. A sunglasses store to give you the accessories you need, and then plates. There's your plate up there with the octopus on it.
Oh yeah, it's quite nice, isn't it? See, I mean, look, I'm sure a lot of these things are hand painted, isn't it? So I think that's actually really good value, considering all things considered.
It's got a friendly 50s vibe. We're going to head out and explore Camden now, I think, and we'll head north of the station and see what we can see.
Londonist Out Loud is sponsored by Audible. To claim your free audiobook from a range of 60,000 titles, try the Audible service on 30-day free trial. Audiobooks can be saved as MP3s and played on your compatible phone, tablet, or desktop, or burned to CD, and they're yours to keep. For your free audiobook, go to www.audible.co.uk/Londonist and click through.
You're listening to Londonist Out Loud. I'm N. Quentin Wolfe. With me is Siddharth Vijaya Kumar, and we are in Camden. Sun streaming down. A beautiful opportunity for a wander through the part of the town that seems to me a little less uniform and predictable as the high street. This is where you would find your tourists on a Saturday, the markets. If you've got brightly coloured hair, this is the place for you.
Yeah.
And I'm with somebody who had no idea until about an hour ago that he was going to be doing any kind of recording and is here feeling rather awkward about the prospect of having to talk about Camden. So what I would encourage you to do, Sid, is take us on a personal tour
of
this bit of the town and tell me what you... I suppose I should add into the mix that in amongst all the people with the studs poking out of every available surface, you are a man in a suit.
Yeah, that's correct.
So we're going to blend in here.
Yeah. Well, it's not actually a suit, though, is it? Because I'm wearing, it's a blazer, I think.
Oh, that's true, right?
It's a blazer, less of a suit.
Yes, you're quite right. I can't see down that far. That's below the cloud level.
I've got a meeting later this evening, so, I'm dressed rather appropriately for that and inappropriately for this.
So tell me about, when do you first remember being in Camden? Because I think it makes an impression on your first visit, doesn't it?
It does, actually. I remember being here when I was 19, 20 maybe for the first time, with a bunch of friends, also from India, actually. And we came here on a night out, looking for the place that does the cheapest beer, basically. And I think, if I remember correctly, we ended up at Stables Market. There's actually there used to be a little club above a record shop that used to be open till about 5-6 in the morning. But I don't know if it's still there now.
That sounds like the spirit of Camden right there. I tell you what struck me in what you said there was that of all the places to come for a cheap beer, today I think Camden probably would be the last.
Yeah, sadly. Well, actually, no, there are some places. Funny enough, there's a place on...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Houston Road, and I think if you go there on a Monday, you can get a beer for about £2. A pint of beer for £2, which I think is pretty good.
It's unheard of.
Yeah, I think so. It is a student night, though, so I do feel awkward in my suit.
I haven't been up this street for a long time. So we're 5 or 6 doors up from the tube station, and Camden Market is to our right. To the left, we've got the Inverness Street Market, which I don't remember very clearly from before. But then, to be honest, every visit about 10, 15 years ago to Camden did not result in clear-headedness.
Yeah. Yes, that is true.
One of the silence there perhaps speaks volumes. One thing I do remember that you don't see along here anymore is the mushroom vendors.
Oh, yeah, actually, that was my first experience of mushrooms as well. Many, many years ago, I think. Why did they stop selling it again?
Well, I think they finally spotted that was a bit of a gaping hole in the drugs laws, didn't they?
Yeah, sadly they did. I didn't try any of them, obviously.
Of course not.
I do remember a number of vendors here and on Portobello Road for some reason.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you could pick your strength and it would describe what the mushroom would do to you.
Yeah, they did, yeah. And apparently, I remember hearing one vendor telling a very frightened teenager that if it gets too overwhelming for you, drink lots of orange juice. So for your listeners of your Londoner sport, that's a piece of advice.
Well, we don't have that sort of listener. I'm slightly dismayed by the number of shops selling Union Jack produce.
Well, actually, what about the ones selling football T-shirts? And I guess this is the problem with Camden now, isn't it? That it really is like any other high street. Well, I wouldn't even say it's like a high street in the UK. It's actually just a tourist trap. You know, I think people are expecting, you know, thousands of tourists, which do come here every day.
Well, they're certainly in evidence,
and,
yeah.
I don't know why they think that they're going to buy a Man United T-shirt, but there you go, in Camden. I'd be interested to know how many they sell.
It's true, of course, that there's Man United supporters all around the globe. But I mean,
I guess that sort of like, you know, captures what's happening to Camden right now, isn't it? That, you know, someone would come here to buy a Man United T-shirt.
Hand on heart, is that a bad thing? Clearly, in terms of the aesthetic of the place, it might not be to one's taste, but it's bringing money in.
Yeah, no, it is bringing money, but I think it's slowly changing the character of Camden, isn't it? And I think, you know, you don't want to sort of fast forward. Well, if you continue on this journey over the next 5 years, then, you know, I can't see, you know, people probably stop coming to Camden because it won't have that unique culture to it anymore.
Yeah, I've got to say, the notable thing from my perspective is that it's not as frightening as it used to be.
And I never remember it frightening.
It's certainly frightening. Really? Yeah, you'd have big crews of punks going along there, going out of their way to look dangerous and drunk. And which is fine. I mean, I'm not sure that I ever perceived myself to be in actual physical danger, but there was an edge to the place which is certainly absent today.
That is true, but funnily enough, actually, I remember when you did see, you know, groups of them walking by, and actually they always looked really aggressive, but they never actually were very aggressive at all. They were actually very easygoing people. I thought,
yeah.
It's a shame not to have that here anymore. Camden's probably gearing up for the next change that's going to come here. And I don't know what that's going to be, but I'm sure it'll be interesting to find out.
As we look across to Camden Market, now I certainly remember this is. I'm conscious that this is becoming, I remember when this was all fields. But I remember Camden Market used to be, or I thought it used to be, a place where a lot of alternative fashion was available. And the alternative fashion I'm seeing there at the moment, a great number of Heisenberg, as in Breaking Bad, T-shirts. So capitalising on that enormous global show. There's the Keep Calm and Carry On franchise, which just keeps on rolling. I don't know who's producing this stuff. So somebody is a Keep Calm millionaire or something, aren't they?
But actually, interestingly, if you go to the back of this market, you start to see some really quirky, independent fashion trends. And I know this because this is where I come to buy all my clothes for fashion, for fancy dress parties.
Oh, right,
okay. So I think, interesting, I don't know, but I'm assuming that the rental at the front of these shops might be higher than the ones at the back, and so the ones at the front will tend to sell the things that the tourists want, whereas perhaps more local people tend to go at the back because they know the kinds of shops that there are. I don't know, so it's just a hypothesis.
Oh, well, that ties in quite nicely with what we've been saying about taking the time to dig into what's really there in the local area. And if you see an independent trader, pop in and have a look, and you might uncover something along the lines of the Camden Collective that we saw earlier.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's still a lot of gems here if you really do look around. I think... Oh, someone just... Was that you, Quinton?
A punk has just hurled herself off the curb in an act of rebellion, or the curbs are a bit slippery.
I think Camden Collective, I think, you know, if you look at some of the quality of some of the clothes, it is quite incredible what they're producing there. And actually, a lot of my friends have started to identify the Camden Collective, you know, independently of me, you know. I mean, they've been saying, oh, you know, a lot of people say, oh, I walk past, you know, you work in Camden, and I walk past your office the other day, and I came across this really cool retail space called Camden Collective. And I think a lot more people are hearing about it. So, you know, I think that's a really good thing.
There seems to be a basic problem here, though, and I hope you won't mind me highlighting it, which is that the footfall north of the station is vastly different to that south of the station.
Yeah, and actually I think that's one of the issues that the Camden Collective faces, because I think a lot of people get off at Camden station and then go right, and so they tend to miss everything on the other side. And to be fair, there's not that much for tourists to see, but then I guess that's what that's what they're trying to change. And actually, this is interesting. I've never seen this shop before, but this looks like a small independent shop among, you know, a whole range of shops selling basically the same thing, which is Oxford University sweatshirts and I Love London tops.
So. I like that Oxford University is getting a look in here, because if you go to Oxford, you'll know that you'll see stalls there selling I Love London merchandise.
Or in the university campuses, yeah.
I'm not exactly sure how that relationship works.
Yeah, I've always wondered why there are so many people in Camden who went to Oxford University.
That concerns me, though, because the sort of experience that's being offered by the Camden Collective retail area there is very much about browsing. Whereas I think a lot of the other shops there are the kind of shop... I don't know whether to call them a destination shop, but you need something and you know that that's where you're going to go and buy it. Whereas here, it's a little bit more freeform.
Well, I would say it's actually the other way around. I think something like Camden Collective, the collective retail space, is probably more of a destination space because they don't have the footfall. Something like this place has natural footfall. So I think you can almost calculate on average, you know, how many people are going to walk past, and of those people, how many are going to come into my shop, and of those people, how many are going to buy my product, which is actually probably what, you know, the KFC down there does. And, you know, that's probably why they decided to take that space. They probably made a calculation and, you know, they can probably within 10% go, yep, this is going to be our revenue the next year. So this should be what we should pay for retail space. And actually, that's a massive problem because it actually affects a lot of independent restaurateurs, because they get outbid on spaces by people like KFC, Pret a Manger, etc. Because some of the key areas around London, some of these companies actually overpay, even though they may not make as much profit as they would like, because they see it as a flagship space. And so for them, it's about a marketing campaign as much about retail sales. And so an independent restaurateur can't really compete with that, which is such a shame.
It's a lot more predatory than I think I realized. Are there other tactics that you notice going on?
I wouldn't, you know, profess to be an expert in this space, but I mean, look, I think big companies are good. You know, they do a lot of good stuff. But
could you persuade us? what sort of thing have you in mind when you say that?
I mean, look, it's only the larger companies that can invest in such, you know, large scale infrastructure projects, and what those infrastructure projects bring is an employment. You know, like if you look at a lot of independent restaurants and shops and stuff, yeah, they do hire people, but they don't obviously hire on the scale that the larger companies do. And hopefully larger companies are also good training grounds for a lot of the future employees of independent shops and restaurants. So I think there is a good ecosystem there. It's just about finding it. So I do think big companies do a lot of good. We need them in our economy, but at the same time, we need to be supporting smaller businesses.
I'm surprised to hear you talk so warmly of the larger companies. I wonder if there's... Have you got professional connections with some of them?
No, I don't. I genuinely believe that, you know, they do a lot of good. Like, you know, they take on graduate training schemes. You know, they take hundreds of people on graduate training schemes. We can't afford to do that. I can afford to train, you know, one or two people at a time, whereas the bigger companies can train 100, 200 people. Mm. You know, they'll end up picking up experience and going off, you know, to work at, you know, hopefully some of the independent companies or setting up their own companies.
So it sounds as though you might be in favour, and this is an idea that I've started to hear a little bit more about recently, and I'm yet to be persuaded one way or the other whether it's the right way forward, but the idea of having very different employment law for small companies than for big companies.
That's quite a controversial one, because I think, how do you decide what's a smaller company and what's a larger company, and, you know, how do you enforce those rules? And I think it gets complicated. But I do think, and I, to be honest, I think the government does do a lot to support smaller businesses.
But I think where this sort of thing kicks in, and I've certainly heard it discussed in the area of maternity leave, as well as one or two other things. So you've got a four-person business. Taking one person out for a year has a disproportionately severe effect, as opposed to if you take a one pregnant person out of a supermarket or something like that.
Yeah.
There are other people who can fill in. So the idea, I think, being that the bigger companies are able to give a bit more sort of social lubricant, I suppose.
Yeah, no, I disagree again. I think, you know, it depends on the company, depends on the team. You know, I know a lot of women who've actually worked, you know, almost through the entire pregnancy. Mm. And then, you know, I think the things like job share schemes after pregnancy, I think work incredibly well. You know, having two people do one job, I think is a great system. Obviously, you need to sort of communicate well between the two people, and, you know, there are certain, you know, drawbacks, obviously. But on the whole, I think it works incredibly well, and, you know, it can be very productive.
We've drifted a long way from
Camden.
From Camden, an interesting detour. Yeah. Well, this certainly looks like the Camden I remember, with the insane shop fronts, the enormous boot sticking out of the front of that building.
Oh, it's all there.
A pair of sneakers over there.
Maybe that's why we have all these Oxford University sweatshirts here, because of the Oxford Arms. Is it like an outpost for the university or something?
It could well be. Maybe that's where the boat race begins. The signs on the outside of these buildings actually remind me of the Ghost Signs episode that we did a few weeks ago. And lots of people made contact with the show saying how much they enjoyed that one. And I was just wondering whether in future years we'll be finding the enormous tattoo sign on the outside of a building and protecting that. Maybe that'll be hidden behind some future advertising hoarding. I really like this, the 3D-ness of it up here. It feels like retail and imagination is just bursting out of the buildings.
And actually, I think a lot of these are quite new as well. I don't remember many of these here. So, you know, that's a start, isn't it? That, you know, we're starting to see more creativity coming back to Camden.
Do you venture up this end of the town very often?
Sadly, I don't. You know, Grub Club is quite all-encompassing at the moment. So, you know, we don't get to enjoy the delights of Camden as much as I would like. Although we do go to the Constitution pub quite a bit.
Oh, right. Whereabouts is that?
So it's a really nice little pub on the canal, towards King's Cross, I guess. Few minutes from Pratt Street. And, you can have a nice cold beer while picking up the sunshine on the canal.
Reminded us that Grub Club is why we're conversing in the first place. So I suppose what we haven't talked about in any respect is the sort of food that's being served up and the sort of chefs that you're working with.
Gosh, what don't we have? we have a real mix, actually. So each week it really depends on the creativity of the chef and also their background. So last week, for example, we had some amazing Burmese dinners. And I don't know if you know, but there is just one Burmese restaurant in all of Europe.
In all of Europe?
In all of Europe, yeah. And that's actually in Edgware Road. And I've been there. It's actually very good.
What is Burmese cuisine?
It's actually a nice mix between Indian and Chinese. And funny enough, I grew up on Burmese food living in India because my mum loved to make khao sui. So I ate a lot of Burmese food. So I was quite happy when I managed to find Burmese food here. But yeah, I think your listeners will really love the Burmese restaurant in Edgware Road. I think it's called Mandalay, if I remember correctly. But don't quote me on that. It's excellent.
And what else could we expect to find through Grubhub?
So, funny enough, this week we got a real mix, actually. We've got some amazing Malaysian lobster for just 8 people in this lovely lady called Karen. She's got a full-time job. She works in a investment company, I believe. And she just loves to host and, you know, cook dinner for her friends. And she does dinners on Grubhub. And actually, a lot of the money that she gets, you know, after she's paid for her ingredients and stuff, she gives it to charity. So it's a nice little touch, I think. So we have that happening this week. And then we've also got a 5-course Argentinian feast in a clock tower apartment in King's Cross. So that's over 3 to 4 days. And it's been selling out incredibly well. I think the last series that he did sold out in 24 hours. So he's got another set happening this week.
You think of Argentina, you think of beefy things.
There is, yeah. There is some Argentinian beef on there. But, you know, it's a real variety, actually. He's got, you know, I think he's doing some ceviche. And also the chef, Martin, he's, you know, obviously a highly trained chef from Argentina. But he's also a professor of gastronomy in Argentina for like 20-odd years. So, you know, it's very flavoursome, technical food. And in a wonderful setting.
When you say technical, are we thinking Blumenthal?
It is, actually, yeah, very Blumenthal-esque, yeah. So I won't be able to, you know, tell you what he does with his blenders and stuff, but, yeah, you should come and see for yourself.
Oh, sounds extremely tempting. What I've been wondering as we've been talking, I wonder what Liv, had she the ability to speak, where would her view of things have differed from yours?
I think Liv is far more of a hippie than I am, as you can see from, you know, when you first meet her. I think she's really, so I think both of us sort of work well together because we see this same problem in a different way. I think Liv wants to bring a community together, a community of, you know, chefs, of food people, or foodies even, people who own the spaces. And she's really interested in this idea of, you know, the social side of Grubhub. You know, how can we regenerate areas in, you know, like Camden or Deptford? You know, we've got a big regeneration project in Deptford currently, where every week we do a brunch by different chefs, you know. So I think this week it's a Bayesian brunch. And the idea behind that is that we bring some life back into Deptford, you know, bring the community together, you know, get people who wouldn't normally go to Deptford to come out there and see what's going on. So it, you know, it really brings, you know, brings some vibrancy to the area, and that's her passion, that's what she loves to do, whereas I'm sort of interested in this idea of how do we empower chefs so that they can set up the next food business, you know. How do we build a high street that has a nice mix between large chains like, you know, Pret a Manger or whatever, and independent cafes and restaurants? That's sort of what I'm really passionate about. So, but I think those two parts come together very nicely, which is why I think Liv and I work well together, because we have, you know, a shared objective. So it's quite nice.
And what's your strategy, but perhaps finally, for reaching the parts that might not naturally be attracted to the sort of concept that you've got going on here? And what I mean by that is, within any area, you're likely to find a constituency that would naturally be drawn to the ideas, the food. They'd be conversant with the kinds of food that you're talking about. But equally, in any area, there'll be some people who feel like this is above and beyond them, and they're uncomfortable,
yeah,
with it. How do you reach those guys?
I totally agree. I think a lot of people would be worried about, you know, attending some of our events. I think
you know, the idea of, you know, of going into this place and meeting, you know, random person and having to, you know, talk to them is actually quite intimidating for some people. You know, going into someone's home can be a very intimidating experience.
And are you going to pick up the wrong fork? And, well, can you afford it?
Guess.
A whole load of different anxieties around food, aren't there?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think our dinners are very informal, so I think there's less of that. But I think, you know, some people are scared about, you know, having to, you know, being forced to talk to someone. And I think that's why it's nice that we have a range of dinners. You know, we've got, you know, if you think of a supper club tends to be in someone's home. And so what we do is a nice mix of, you know, dinners in people's homes to dinners in commercial spaces. And so actually it's not that different. You know, it is like going to a restaurant, but it's more fun. You know, you're walking into a commercial space. You know, you sort of have some, you know, idea of what's going on, because, you know, but it's not exactly the same thing. Like, for example, when you walk into a restaurant, you sort of know what's going to happen next, you know? You walk in and, you know, someone comes and shows you a table, and then you sit down, and then you might look at your phone, and then someone will come and give you the menu. It's all very sort of robotic. It's all very process-driven. Whereas with ours, it's slightly different in that, yeah, you'll walk into a restaurant, but it's not like a restaurant that you've been into before. You know, what we always find from our chefs, they always say that, you know, whenever they see people come in, you know, a lot of our dinners tend to be communal style, you know, shared tables. And, you know, the first people who walk in, they always try to sit as far away from each other as possible, you know. People walk in and start looking around and, you know, think, okay, you know what, I'll go and sit right at the other end of that table so I don't have to talk to these two people. And then by the end of the evening, you know, you can see everyone sort of leaning into the table, and, you know, and there's a sort of life to this restaurant. And I guess that's what we're trying to do. You know, we want to bring a restaurant to life, you know, where, you know, everyone is a player in that. You know, there is, you know, you have the customer, you have the waiting staff, you have the space, you have the chef, and all of these elements come together to create something awesome. You know, like, you know, we want there to be, you know, lots of noise in the restaurant, and then, you know, when the dinner's finished, the chef comes out and everyone's clapping him at the end.
Yes,
you know?
I was going to say, I couldn't imagine he'd be locked in the kitchen all day, or she would be locked in the kitchen.
Yeah, well, funny enough, actually, everyone assumes, you know, the chef is a man, but, you know, on our side, we actually find that, you know, a lot of our chefs are women, which is great to see, actually, you know, and hopefully we'll start to see more of our Grub Club chefs move into restaurants and setting up their own restaurants, and we'll have more female-dominated restaurants in the future. But yeah, no, the idea is that chefs love to, you know, find out what people think about their food, and, you know, in the same way that a DJ likes to entertain their audience, a chef likes to do the same thing. Then they like to amaze them and surprise them, and it's lovely when the chef comes out at the end of an evening and everyone's clapping him or her. And it's exciting to see, and that's what we want a Grub Club to be about. You know, we want the whole experience to come alive in a way that it doesn't in a restaurant. You know, like, you know, a lot of these restaurants that you go to, you literally see, you know, people there sitting on their phone, you know, an occasional comment to each other, but there's no interaction.
Well, let me give you the antithesis, and you may have come across this document yourself, but it was pinned to the wall of a very successful pub chain. Yeah. I won't say which one. And it was in the staff area. I can't remember how I came upon it, but I happened to be able to get a gander at it. And it was a list of principles by which the staff should operate. And it said things like, if the customer comes within 3 metres of the till, he or she must be greeted within 2.5 seconds of entering that area. I think we can safely say that Grub Club is the exact opposite of that sort of process-driven idea.
It is. We don't want there to be any processes. We want it to be natural, you know? But, you know, there are certain, you know, look, I'm not one of these people that goes, oh, anything that these big companies do, you know, processes are wrong. Processes are good, you know, it's good
and they work.
Some level of training, you know, we want, you know, even our hosts, we sort of tell a lot of them, you know, how, you know, what are the things to look for? What are, you know, how do you make a customer feel comfortable when they get in there? You know, there are some basic things you have to do, but you don't want it to be overly process driven, you know, it has to be come across really naturally. But, you know, when you, you know, hire, you know, someone young, you know what, they need to be trained. They need to be told, you know, how to do certain things. I think this example is a bit extreme, obviously. But, you know, the sentiment I can sort of understand, I think, if, you know, but maybe not so military style.
You're a very agreeable chap, aren't you? Yeah. You see all sides of the argument.
I always like, you know, I'm Indian, aren't I? So we tend to sit on the fence with a number of things, you know. But no, I'm very passionate about certain things, but I like to see the whole argument, because I think that sometimes we can be too idealistic and
too dogmatic, even.
Yeah. Too dogmatic, yeah. I completely agree. As I should.
No, we've nudged him off the fence. We have to come to the end of our exposure to Grub Club. We cannot depart, though, without getting website details, and how should people get in contact?
So if you want to come to our site, you can Google us, Grub Club, or you can go to the URL, which is grubclub.com, or you can find us on Facebook and Twitter.
You know, I sometimes wonder why we give out websites anymore. It's a bit gone, really, as a thing, isn't it?
It really is, actually. I mean, I people always say .co. Is it .co.uk? Is it .com? It's like, you know what? You'll find it.
Yeah. I would encourage you, listener, to find it. By the way, I should just ask before we go, you didn't expect to be doing a podcast today. How do you think you got on? What was the experience like?
It was a lot of fun. I enjoyed talking to you, oddly enough.
Thanks. Thank you very much.
But I have to say, I feel like my knowledge of Camden is going to come across in the podcast. So I'm a bit worried that your Londonist users are not going to be too happy with the information I've given them. But especially as I know, Londonist users are very knowledgeable of London.
They know their stuff.
They know their stuff. I don't think I've increased their knowledge of London in any way at all.
I think they might be generous and let you off the hook.
Yeah, thank you.
For today, though, Siddharth Vijaya Kumar. Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot, Quentin. Nice meeting you.
My heart aches for some far off place. No one could have left you.
And that's all for this week. My thanks for this week to Sid Kumar and to Olivia Saboni. Thanks to Mark Barr and Bernie Barkley. Theme and incidental music was by Songs from the Howling Sea. I'm in Quentin Wolfe.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.